Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
We're going to do the text we're going to do starting tomorrow is the Dakshinamurti text. I might do some introductory verses to it also. I'll have to get that together. But the Dakshinamurti text is very thorough. Each verse, it'd be hard to complete one verse, in fact, in one sitting. Probably be two classes per verse, I would imagine, because there's so it's so rich, you know. Whole vision is really in Dakshinamurti if you take those 10 verses. So I'm looking. I think you'll like it. Be nice for us. So for newer people, the class will be at kind of a deep level, but I will translate all of the Sanskrit. If I start not translating, just raise your hand. It means that I'm carried away with myself. I'm pretty good at translating. I'm not trying to make it into a Sanskrit class, but it's just sometimes a lot of these terms that we use are like English for us. And they become like English for you also over time, you know, because sometimes the Sanskrit term holds the meaning much better than any English term, you know, and so we actually like to take a Sanskrit term and make that our own, fill it with meaning, you know, and then it works a lot better because all of the English terms are already filled with meaning, but not the meaning that we want it to be filled with. That's a problem. So so that'll be happening. And when you listen, I would just not worry. The Vedanta, when you listen, you want to just be relaxed and try to see what's being said instead of listening as though it's a lecture where you need to take notes and, you know, try to remember what she's saying and all that. That's not how the Upanishads work or how the Vedanta teaching works. The teaching is a pramana. It means it's a means of knowledge, kind of like your eyes are a means of knowledge for seeing forms or color. The Vedanta itself is a means of knowledge for seeing, recognizing yourself, or recognizing the nature of this reality that we're sitting here experiencing right now. There's some things to understand about it, to actually see, you know, not to remember. The memory is not the point. Seeing is the point, actually recognizing what's being said, and then you'll remember it. That comes later, you know. But what you want is to just be able to kind of relax and take it in and try to see what's being said. And especially with the Vedanta, you know, we're holding up a mirror to you, to your own self that is here right now as me. Like if you say, you know, I am here, I'm sitting in the chair here, I'm here, you know, I'm talking or I'm listening. That I that you're referring to, you know, is normally, by until you know differently, it's normally just conflated or superimposed on this body-mind sense organ. So when you say I, you just mean this whole collection here. You know, this me that is this body-mind sense organs. But now we're going to hold up a mirror to that me, which is this body-mind sense organs, but is also free of your body-mind sense organs. And that needs to be seen. So there's this superimposition taking place where I think I'm just this one little bundle here. And so when this bundle dies, I die, right? Or when my mind is sad or depressed, I am sad and depressed. It's all just, you know what conflated means? It's all superimposed together into one entity. And that's not true. That's not the reality. But even though that's not how it is, because we think that's how it is. That's the reality we're living. We're living in kind of a false conception of reality because we haven't recognized my own self. It's kind of like if you're walking along and you mistake a rope for a snake, even though there's no snake there, your reality is the snake, right? It's not the rope. There's no snake there. It's projection. But your reality is the snake, not the rope. And so the reality of your own who you are is this body, mind, sense, organ conglomerate, which is me, instead of recognizing, you know, myself as being the very me that the body, mind, sense organs enjoys, but at the same time being completely changeless and free of it. And that, it just has to be pointed out. We're pointing out something that's actually here for you to recognize, not something for you to remember. Oh, there's a body, a mind, and a sense organs, and there is a self that is free from that. You know, that's not Vedanta. Vedanta is letting those words land on the fact of it. So you just have to listen and relax. And if I'm saying something over your head because you haven't had enough foundation yet for how much listening that you've done, don't worry about it because it'll keep going around like this. So just let, if it goes over your head, just let it go over your head. Don't worry. It'll circle around. And the things that you're missing at this moment, you'll catch a little later. You know, so, because otherwise you can get tense. I used to sometimes get worried, you know, because I didn't catch this or catch that. But you will, because it'll all circle around and you'll get the things that you need to understand. So the main thing is just to be relaxed. And just try to see what's being said so that you can actually recognize the reality of this experience that we're having. The experience that we're having includes me, right? My own self, your own self. It includes what's ever going on in your mind, all of your moods and all of your emotions and all of your thoughts and all of your memories. It includes all of your perceptions, all the baggage you're carrying in terms of all the little children inside, all the unconscious things, everything. That's the, every moment we're having an experience. You know, that includes, that's taking place on many different levels. But one thing, I'm always the center of that experience. Those experiences aren't happening away from me. Right? They're all my experiences. But who's me that's saying my? Right? So we have to sort all of that out a little bit, you know, and start being the rope instead of the snake, basically. It makes a huge, huge difference. So I'm just saying this now so that you can kind of prepare yourself to kind of just relax and listen and get what you can, and know in the next class you'll get more, in the next class you'll get more, in the next class you'll say, oh, that's what she meant. Keeps going like that. You know, so just let that process, give trust in your own psyche, you know, to let this knowledge just take place, to naturally take place with just being present. All that's required is just be present, that your mind is available. That's what's important, you know. Of course, that's a huge thing for your mind to be available. Swamiji used to always make fun of that because your body can be available in the class, but not your mind. So he would go like this. I've seen him do this so many times, making kind of fun of the situation. You're in the class and you're like this. and then you come back. So, because our mind wanders off all the time, you know. Even like if you're driving or if you're reading a book or whatever, your mind's doing this and then it's doing that. If you can just relax and have your mind available, that's a huge thing, you know. And just not worry too much, just give the benefit of the doubt in the sense that, oh, there's this knowledge, let's see what it is. Let's see what the Upanishads have to say, you know. And just let it take place. We have a week now. We have a week and we're having several classes with meditation, so. Meditation is like that too. If I'll be doing guided meditation, which has more talking in it than in what we're used to in meditation, where I'm just kind of sitting with myself. But these meditations that we're going to be doing are teaching meditations, in the sense that I'm actually kind of directing your mind to do this and do that and see this and see that. You know, there are things that certain things that you'll learn, and then you'll be able to do them on your own. You know, so it's developing these meditations. There will be a lot of quiet time, but also we're going to just kind of develop a certain skills. You know, skills and kind of clarity that I think can be really, really useful. And then you learn those skills, and then you can do them on your own. You know, so meditation isn't just going to be sitting quietly. It's going to have some words. Also, since we have an hour for meditation, I'll probably spend half of the class teaching, actually not meditating, but teaching things about meditation, and then we'll be doing meditation. So it'll be a combination like that. Then we have satsang at night. So satsang means whatever questions are. It gives you an opportunity to write down your questions or to bring them to class and be able to ask. A lot of people like to write them down because then you have it clearly. And then I just go through those questions one by one. And that gives an opportunity also. Say if something, I didn't get this or I didn't understand that. Or whatever it is, you're able to write that question down, and then we can actually spend some time on that particular question. So it's just an avenue for doing that. Sound okay? And I like to meet with everybody. We have to make a schedule for that. It just gives me a chance to get to know you a little bit. What else? Anybody have anything on your mind?
Do you have a set for the whole week?
Yes.
Do you know everything what you're going to do, or is it going to be somehow developed during the week?
Well, I kind of have basic things that I want to cover in the classes on meditation. So I know that there's certain things I want you to be sitting with now that I think would be helpful. And then we're doing a text. Mm. It's called the Dakshinamurti Stotram. It's 10 verses. And so that each verse provides a structure for what's going to be unfolded, and that those verses, as I was saying, they're very dense. There's a lot of material in them, so it'd probably take me 2 days to work through one verse and then two like that. So some of them can be one. But I plan to finish it. So that will provide structure. And then the satsang has its own structure, because that depends upon what's coming from you and what's on your mind, like that. So, it's not just kind of a free-for-all. There's definite things that need to be, that I'd like to teach.
Knowledge do you think you need to have to get your stuff into your body?
I don't think you need pre-knowledge exactly, but you do need interest. Mm. The subject matter, what's being taught, has to be something that you want to learn. Otherwise you're your psyche is kind of not open to it enough to make it meaningful for you. So, but it's not, I don't feel that the students in this class, the ones that don't have a lot of background, won't get anything. I don't feel that way at all. But the ones that do have background will get some new things, new depths. But that's why I was asking, wanting to know kind of where everybody's at. The class is always a mix. You know, it's a mix of different levels, kind of circling around different, covering different levels, you know. And some of them for brand new people. One interesting thing is that even for things that are maybe require more of a foundation, often you won't feel that you don't know what's being said. It's just later on you feel like, oh, you know? you understand it. And it's one interesting thing I've noticed is it's not like you don't understand it the first time, but after you hear it several times, now you kind of really understand it, but it's because it has more context. So it's not that you were wrong, it's just that now it's contextualized more, and so now you really see it. That's the, oh, now I really see it. Now I really see it, like that, something like that. But you can't say that you didn't see it before, because you did. You know, unless it's something that you just didn't get, and then that's a question that is for satsang. What did she mean there by that? What did you mean by that? You know, that's different. Then that's a question you bring up in class.
Is that still like that for you, that you feel, well, now I really see it more?
I don't think it's quite like that now, but this is 40 years later. Nevertheless, when we're teaching, or when class is going on, it's just, there's always fresh, deeper connections that are beautiful, you know. But it's, yeah. I think that those type, that kind of, those connections, Bhagavan gives us little gifts all the time. Little gifts of understanding, little subtleties and things like that. Yeah. So they become more like enhancements than clarities. Though, I don't know, on some level I think it's true that clarity continues to increase in terms of what we call the Ishwara. Yeah. And your own owning it up continues to increase. Like Puja Swamiji said, in the end your heart has to be as big as Ishwara's. That's pretty big. And so watching as you mature, watching the resistances to that drop off, and watching the resistances that are still remaining. You know, because for your heart to be as big as Ishwara's doesn't mean becomes big. It means that there is no, there's understanding, there's not rejection, there's no need to reject, no need to push someone away. You might not take up what they're doing, but inside there's no pushing away. You know, there's just understanding, and like Puja Swamiji would say, it's like you understand the person, and it's more like, how can I help? Rather than, you know, I don't want to have to deal with you. So what if your relationship to the creation and to all beings doesn't involve rejection? It involves understanding, curiosity, and wanting to be helpful, you know, if there's any way to be helpful. That's a big thing. Because there's usually some situations and some people in your life that you would be better off, you feel, if they weren't around. You know? In some way or another. And if you happen to be in a position where there is no such person, that's really a blessing. Bhagavan's just giving you time out. We notice that sometimes when I'm at CIS, where I'm teaching. Sometimes you'll get the group of students where there'll be a very positive harmony among the whole group, you know, and so a lot happens. There's kind of a lot of trust. There's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of joy about being together. But sometimes you'll get a group, a constellation, where it's very, one person is really rubbing against other people like that, and so that group doesn't gel very well. And you still have to teach the class, and we have to make that class work. You know, but the class is, there's a different type of learning going on. It's more of a learning of how to be in this kind of a difficult situation, you know. It's a lot different than being in a situation where everybody's kind of on the same page and wants to be together and wants to do this work together. Yeah, that's some punya. So I must say that the harder ones are a lot of punya also, because those are your sadhanas. But those are also a blessing, because it's just that you have to do some work instead of being on vacation. Yeah, your punya vacation. Yeah. Swargaloka for an hour. Yeah. Pooja Swamiji used to talk about mastery. In India, they say the mastery of any subject requires a commitment to that subject for 12 years. But that's usually the time it takes, a commitment. But it's not just 12 years passing by. It's a commitment, nishta. He also started defining the word nishta instead of being well-rooted in something. He went from well-rooted, always use like jnana nishta, you're well rooted, nishta in this knowledge, jnana nishta. So somebody who has jnana nishta means that they're well rooted in this knowledge, they have clarity. So he went from jnana nishta, then he started stop the well rooted, he went to clarity. A person who has clarity in this knowledge. And by clarity he meant a person who is now free from doubts, means whatever real questions or things that have come up. You know, those questions now, they've just been more or less rooted out. Because as they come up, you already know what it is. So there's a lot of those doubts are not there anymore because they've resolved in knowledge. So he went from well-rooted to clarity. And then he went from clarity to commitment. Jnana nishta is a commitment to your knowledge. And that is really interesting. I like that. I mean, I like to use all of them, actually, because he had reasons for using all three words, but that was the development. The commitment is that you would rather a jnani, jnani means somebody who has self-knowledge, jnanam, jnana means knowledge, jnani is one who has knowledge. So we say, if we say a person is a jnani, that we're talking about atma-jnana. They have self-knowledge. They're a jnani. So we don't say the atma-jnani. We just say jnani, because within this context, the person who's a jnani, they have self-knowledge. If that person is a jnani, they have self-knowledge, that will mature into jnana-nishta. Jnana-nishta means that your mind is committed to that knowledge. Your commitment is there means that I would rather be acting and responding from my knowledge then responding from my ignorance or responding from habitual ignorance. And so what that would mean is say you have knowledge, you've gained knowledge, but there are a lot of just habitual habit patterns and little ones inside that have emotional issues and, you know, just the habitual ways of behavior that you bring to this knowledge. Now, when you first come to this knowledge with your habitual behaviors, you gain this knowledge. As you're gaining this knowledge, those habitual behaviors, sometimes we call it emotional lag time, hang on. Okay? Now, say they're hanging on, you're still feeling like this and acting like this, even though you have knowledge, still the mind is ruling in a way. It's taking over the ignorant mind or whatever. The emotional mind continues to take over. When you have a commitment to your knowledge, jnana nishtha, then for you, all of those things are sadhanas. It's no longer about the emotions or about the reactions to so-and-so or so-and-so. It's about the way my mind is behaving is really not in harmony with my knowledge, you know? And so it becomes a sadhana. I would prefer, let me put it this way, to make it more, humanize it more. I wish I was acting like this, not like this. I wish I felt like this, not like this, because feeling like this is causing me a lot of pain, or acting like this is causing me a lot of pain. Now, there's this kind of a lag time where even though you feel acting like this or feeling like this is causing me a lot of pain, all you do about it is say, yeah, and I wish I didn't feel that way, you know, or something like that. But that those feelings and those ways of behaving rule. They still rule. And you have a value for them. You kind of have a value for them. Instead of having a value for being with those feelings and those reactions and behaviors in a way that is helpful to resolving them. So jnana nishtha means that the buddhi, means the mind, the part of the mind, the intellect that has gained this knowledge is stronger and the value is more toward your knowledge and abiding in your knowledge than is the value for this pain that's going on. And so what happens is that now this pain or this way of behavior is something that I want to be with in a way that is healing and resolves and helps it resolve into my knowledge. That's jnana nishtha. That person's a jnani. Because it's not just to be a jnani. Jnani is not just an idealistic state where you think, now that I have self-knowledge, there are no problems that arise in my mind. And everybody thinks, oh, well, I'm not there yet. You know, because you make up some kind of imaginal state for yourself that's not really going to happen, you know. But what does happen in jnana nishtha is that when your mind is in trouble in this way or that way, you, your buddhi, the one who has knowledge, comes to its aid. And that is your value. The value is to come to the aid of that problem in such a way, with your knowledge in such a way, that can help it to resolve. There's a lot of love and kindness there, you know. It's like the difference between, well, I'm making this up, but maybe it'll work. The difference is like, say you have a little child and your child is hurt. Somebody hurt her feelings or, you know, and upset her. And so she's really hurt and crying and everything. And you as the parent, the good mom or dad, go up to your child and she tells you all about it. And you say, yeah, that's really terrible. I'm really sorry that I'm really sorry that that happened. They should never have done that to you. You know, that should never have happened. Or whatever you say. Except then you say it in such a way that it doesn't give any way of resolving it. It only validates it. You know? We need to validate and then resolve. The validating part has to do with accepting the problem. Instead of rejecting the problem, it's accepting the problem. I understand. I wouldn't want that done to me either. She really hurt your feelings. But then, there's more, right? Then, there's that's all becomes healing when then you kind of bring it back home. So that she, the little girl, or whoever the girl becomes okay again, you know, comes back home. So that's what has to be our intent is with these problems that arise is to bring the mind back home to myself, to my knowledge. And there's a whole process, this knowledge around how to do that. But if I have Jnana Nishtha, my commitment is to do that. You know. And that takes a lot of consciousness, especially when you're annoyed or reacting at somebody or irritated. Or your mind makes room for a lot of things, you know. But what if you decide, you know, to let Ishwara be? That requires a lot of consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We'll get more into it. So Swamiji went for Nishtha as commitment. It's really good to meditate on what he means by the Puja Swamiji, commitment. You know, well-rooted, with the clarity to commitment. Because Nishtha means that the whole life is held by my knowledge. That's the Buddhist love, the Buddhist commitment. And I think it's really neat to understand it. How are we doing? It's still early. I really feel I'm going to have to wear that mask.
It's still light.
Yeah, it's still light. Yeah, it's early yet. It's like 8 o'clock.
I if no one has asked, I can always pull up some questions.
Maybe one more, then we'll go to...
Okay. Yeah. I can wait also, it's nothing...
Well, cool. Tell me, I'll decide.
Okay.
If I can do it.
Well, I'm thinking about when we say, my mind does this and that, for example, like, or my body is blah, blah. How to know when that is just a way to be more clear about exactly what I'm talking about? By, say, about myself, for example, and when is it some kind of dissociation happening? Like, how do you see the difference there?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question, but I'll say it how I think I understand it. In its one text, beautiful text called Panchadashi, it has 15 chapters in it. In the 7th chapter, the teacher talks about this. That for jnani, for somebody who has self-knowledge, the way we use I and mine is different in different occasions. If I'm teaching, or you're in class, in satsang in class, when we're talking or unfolding the meaning of I, we're talking about the Atma, which is Brahman, the self, which is limitless conscious being that never does anything, right? It's changeless and the same in all beings. So that's... And when I think of myself, I'm referring to myself as Atma, as that self, which is absolute fullness and changeless, you know, and never tainted by any experiences. But when I'm in the world talking to my friends or just we're having dinner together, whether you're a bunch of jnanis or ajnanis or a mix, then I say, oh, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that pie that we just had. Okay. Now then somebody could think, oh, she doesn't have knowledge. Because now all of a sudden the self has become an enjoyer. You know? Atma's not an enjoyer, and yet she enjoyed that pie, you know? Right? But that's because we, within duality, it's important for us to talk like a normal person. Right? You know what you're saying when you say, I enjoyed that pie. I'm saying a lot of things my mind had enjoyed, a sukhavritti, a pleasurable thought, and a pleasurable emotion upon the eating of that pie. Right? A pleasurable emotion took place in my mind, which the Atma illumined. So now, which is illumined, but not participated in by consciousness. And so we just know that when, if I say I really enjoyed the pie, I know what I'm saying. It's not, I don't at all think that all of a sudden the Atma has become, the self has become an enjoyer. But we're just talking, or I'm really looking forward to taking a walk with my new hiking boots. Okay? Now the Atma walks. The Atma now hikes. Boy. The self is now a hiker. Okay. See what I mean? So he says, he breaks it down where for an ajnani, somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, when they say I, me, mine, they're also referring, sometimes they're referring to their mind, sometimes they're referring to their body, sometimes they're referring to their prana. You know, I don't feel have any energy, right? So the I is always shifting around. They don't think about it like that, and they also take the I to have all of these qualities because that viveka, that discrimination, hasn't taken place, right? But for a jnani, you know who you are. And then the I is being used relatively based upon the situation that you find yourself in, and you're very aware of that too. So there's no dissociation. I mean, I would say, well, this gets, I'll just say a few sentences about this because it's a whole class actually. But say at any given moment, for somebody, if you know yourself, your own being, as you are, as the self is, the Atma is, this conscious being that is the truth of you, who you really are, that you are always there, self-evident me, is ever-present in always the same form. There's never any shift. There's nothing ever happens. I'm always exactly the same. And there are all the activities of the mind, which reflect that self as though you enjoy the knownness of yourself, and the body, because of the subtle body going all the way through the body, that also reflects me, right, the me-ness. So all of that, all those kind of the reflective awareness, as though reflective, I'll have to really talk more about that in the class, the reflective awareness of the body, the reflective awareness of the mind and the emotions, that's also taking place. So at any given moment, there's the stability of your own presence, and then there's the consciousness of the body, mind, sense organs, the thoughts, the moods, the emotions. Both are present at all times. Well, self is present at all times, and then the mind and body and emotions and thoughts are continually changing. But for you, there's always going to be the stability of your own being, that self-evident presence, and the thoughts and things that are going on in the upadis, in the conditioning adjuncts of your, upadi means conditioning adjunct of your body, mind, sense organs. Is that what you're saying, or are you saying something different?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the topic right there.
Yeah, and then you don't worry, you know, about saying I or mine. On the other hand, sometimes your mind gets carried away by your thoughts or by your emotions, you know, your reactions. It gets carried away, and then you have to then there's an identification that takes place at that time, where you as though become a jiva. Jiva means like an individual, who an angry self, irritated self, right? And then that's when you have to bring your mind back.
I think what's talked like in the seventh chapter there, it seems to me that's kind of from the standpoint of a jnani. A jnani would then say this and that. But for the jnani, it's clear.
Yeah.
But for someone where it's not clear, where you're still gaining the knowledge?
Well, then what's happening is that there's a difference between... So some of this is going to go over people's heads, but don't worry about it. Jiva Srishti and Ishwara Srishti. It's like there's the jiva is the individual's projections and Ishwara, you know, which is not a projection. So your projections are taking place on the empirical reality that's being experienced, you know. That's what happens when the jiva is up. It means I find myself all of a sudden, I want this, or I'm really upset. And that's how you're feeling. I'm really upset because something didn't go my way in one way or another. For some reason, I didn't want this to be happening, you know. And so then I'm invested in that. And it happens just like that because that's what we have beginningless lifetimes of living that way, you know. And so whenever you find yourself like that, I'm so upset or I'm so angry or this or that has happened. For jnana nishtha, as the jnana nishtha, that commitment to knowledge strengthens, your buddhi is stronger than that jiva, that one who says, I'm upset about this and I didn't want that to happen or whatever. There comes a time when the buddhi, your the mind, the intellect, your knowledge is much stronger than that one. And then there's a commitment. The buddhi has a commitment to helping that one and bring it back to your knowledge, you know. But for a long time, speaking personally, the one who says, I'm so upset and I didn't really want to happen, that one is stronger than the buddhi and doesn't really want the buddhi to be around right now because I'm upset. And I have a value for my upset, you know. So at that point, at that moment, that jnana nishtha is kind of submerged. It's not really available, you know. So when you really have jnana nishtha, when it becomes really strong, when this jiva, this individual who says, I want this and I don't want that and I need this and I need and I'm upset about it, the upset about it is the key because I can want something and I don't get it, that's fine. And my anand and my fullness isn't dependent on that. But when it is, my buddhi gets swallowed by the upset. So it doesn't have any strength it doesn't have any strength to come to the rescue because it's been swallowed by that agitation or whatever, you know. But what will usually happen in that case is over some time, the agitation will settle down and then your buddhi will rise out of the overwhelm and then become helpful. But it's that buddhi that becomes stronger and stronger and stronger so that when the mind does get into some sort of a trouble, the buddhi is just available to come. It's not overwhelmed. It's available to come and help. But for a long time, it's emotional nishtha. The commitment is to the reaction. And the buddhi is overwhelmed by the emotion. Does that make sense? So yeah, we have to sit with that, make that more clear, because it's helpful to know. It's also helpful to know because you can then start to realize that often your mind is more committed to the emotion than to coming and helping to resolve the emotion. But that's an important thing to recognize, you know. And also the way you come to help that emotion doesn't have to be like a very strict parent. You're not allowed to have this emotion. far away. It's not bad. It's about being able to help in a way that's in harmony with your knowledge. Yeah. It's not being, some students, when it's called the Vedanta stick. Bring out the Vedanta stick now. Whip you into shape. That doesn't work. Maybe that's more what you're talking about.
I just find it very helpful to, or I notice that I say often, my mind this or my body this and all. And then we had that up as a discussion when that could be, you know, when and if that could be some sort of dissociation. And if it was, then maybe I wouldn't know myself, I wouldn't see that myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but say you're talking like that, we talk among ourselves, you know, my mind is really acting out right now. You're talking to another Vedanta, they know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And you're kind of, that's more the jnana-nishtha, where you're making, becomes a sadhana, where you're aware of your mind doing this, and then you're wanting to help, or you're just analyzing it or talking about it. That's why you would say something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's useful. That means you're just talking with some of your gurubhais and talking about what your mind is doing.
So you don't think it's any
problem?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Good.
you'd have to present, I don't see any problem at all with it. I think just think that you're objectifying the mind and the problem and wanting to work on it. Mm. Yeah. Should we say our prayer? Remember, I say it differently, so I'm going to flub it up a little bit. But you just go ahead and do the way.
We also have it written here.
What?
We have it there on paper if anyone needs to look.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We should pass that around. Anybody need?
Swastik prajabhya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha gobrahmanebhya shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyaha prithivi sasya shalini desho yamksho barahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu Sarvesham shantir bhavatu Sarvesham bhurnam bhavatu Sarvesham mangalam bhavatu Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om
Om Tat Sat.